Alas, when anyone goes out on the edge, out onto the overhang, as it were, then they're going to be subjected to ridicule and scrutiny they would not have been subjected to under really any other circumstance. As long as you stay within the parameters of the known, you're fine. You get out there into the unknown, well, you're just asking for it. So let's discuss with Ralph Blumenthal when we come back in just a moment what led up to the demise of John Mack and how much ridicule he actually was subjected to, and in fact some of the craziest things that some of the people who came in contact with John Edward Mack tried to lay on him, such as being taken onto a spaceship with Nikita Khrushchev and President John F. Kennedy during the Cuban Missile Crisis, just stuff like that. Just strap in a little tighter. It has the potential to get slightly deeper. This is Coast to Coast AM. Unbelievable stuff that appears in your article on Vanity Fair. I'm looking at the date here because it's a huge article. May 10th, 2013. What sorts of things eventually academia turned against John Mack, I suppose? I mean, did they try to ruin him? Did they threaten him?
Yeah. I mean, Harvard was mortified by his increasingly vocal utterances and appearances and, you know, involving alien abduction. They viewed him as an advocate. They thought he lost his scientific detachment. And basically, it was a big embarrassment to Harvard. And Mack himself admitted later in his career that he may have been too credulous and not detached enough in his approach. But Harvard convened basically an inquisition is what I call it, where they had a committee looking into every aspect of his work, whether he was taking insurance money for treating these, you know, abductees or experiencers, as he liked to call them, whether he, you know, had lost his scientific integrity. All these things, and put him through a really grueling inquisition. He hired two spectacular lawyers, and in the end, he prevailed. They backed down, Harvard, and admitted that they just chastised him. He should continue to, you know, observe a scientific method, but they said he's free to continue his research. So after all that, he was mildly rebuked, to say the least, and sent on his way. But by then, he had suffered a lot, and it all came to a crashing end in London in 2007. He was there to deliver a lecture on Lawrence of Arabia. He'd written his, 30 years before, he'd written his Pulitzer Prize-winning biography, and he stepped out of a subway, an underground station, was mowed down by a drunk driver and killed. Of course, there were a lot of, we're talking about conspiracy theories, of course, such a controversial, you know, character like Mack to have been killed by, in that way in London, immediately gave rise to all kinds of dark speculation that he'd been assassinated by the government. But I've looked into that. I've gone through the accident reports. The man who hit him was admittedly drunk and interviewed at great length. The family looked into it, and there was really nothing more sinister than it was a terrible accident.
Yeah.
But, that was the end of John Mack. Although actually it wasn't the end, because his associates said later that he'd appeared to them with different messages. And one of the things he was working on, in addition to alien abduction, was a survival, life after death, which he believed in. He was preparing a book on some people he knew, a woman who had died and had appeared to her husband, or so he said, with different messages. And he himself, according to associates, appeared to them after he died with different messages. So it really gave a fascinating twist to the story.
You know, I suppose, just playing devil's advocate just for the moment, I suppose if scientific if the scientific paradigm is to gather all of the available evidence that you can that points in a certain direction, I think the object is to duplicate an effect, and then by using the same techniques and the same empirical evidence, be able to recreate the effect over and over and over again, and then they can write down in the journal, yes, this when 1 + 1 it does in fact equal 2. So I can sort of see where they would say, this is not exactly scientific, because you can't just manifest an alien abduction. But when he writes that nothing in my 40 years of familiarity with psychiatry prepared me, that's pretty strong. I mean, all of this man's quotes, they seem extraordinarily rational and perfectly objective. It's not as though he was suggesting this to anybody, but in this really long article, which is extraordinary, individuals reported being taken against their will, sometimes through the walls of their houses, subjected to elaborate intrusive procedures which appear to have a reproductive purpose. And then there are reports that yes, we've had children with the aliens and so forth. What do you make of all this? You're a scientist yourself, in a way. I mean, you're a journalistic scientist. You assemble the evidence and then make a report.
Well, that's flattering. Thank you. I'm not really a scientist, but I do certainly understand scientific method. I've applied rigorous methods to my investigative reporting. So first of all, let's deal with the issue of scientific method and the fact that these experiences cannot be duplicated. It's absolutely true. No one has been able to materialize an abduction, to make an abduction happen. UFOs can't be summoned on command. So there's definitely a problem in reproducing these experiments to the satisfaction of the scientific community. It's very clear that this is in a realm that does not lend itself to scientific proof. And Mac himself acknowledged this. He said the questions of the proof is never robust. There's fragmentary proof. People who've reported abduction have had strange marks on their bodies. This is documented in case after case. Witnesses have reported UFOs around the time other people said they were abducted. There are these strange connections, but it always falls short of absolute proof. As Max said, these fragments of evidence were never robust enough to carry a case through to the satisfaction of really anybody, him included. But he said there was room for a new science of human experience to understand why thousands and thousands of people have reported these similar experiences from all walks of life, all corners of the earth. They fall into certain patterns of experience. Now, they all didn't get together and decide a story to tell, and they all didn't get it from TV. Some of these people were children who were too young to even know the words, but they explained, told of what had happened to them in children's language. Anyway, there's a long history of these encounters. All Mac was saying, in essence, was that we have to admit that these experiences have some kind of authenticity that is worth studying further. He couldn't explain it. Nobody can explain it. Whether these are beings from another universe, whether they are material beings, whether this is coming through some other dimension, there's a million questions. No one who's smart about this issue is saying that they have any answers. All people have is questions. But the questions are real and urgent, and they should not be dealt with ridicule. As a matter of fact, one of the most troubling aspects for these people, these experiencers, is that they've suffered these weird experiences. They hope to be told by people like John Mack that they're crazy. Mac tells them, you know what, you're not crazy. Something happened to you that we can't understand. And the people are more troubled than ever because they now can't explain it themselves. And then to be ridiculed by society as nuts or, you know, outcasts is a double insult and is even more troubling. So a lot of people don't come forward. You know, John, the popular conception is that, you know, these people are publicity seekers who want to talk about their experiences and claim that they've been abducted. They don't want to talk about it. Mostly they're very reluctant to admit that anything happened to them because they know how ridiculous it sounds. So these people are really suffering terrible experiences and nowhere really to go to be, you know, taken seriously or, and that's what Mac, why he was so special and so different. He listened to them.
Yeah. Well, I, now, again, taking from your article in 92, he and a David E. Pritchard, a pioneering physicist in atom optics at MIT, got that institution to open its doors to a revolutionary alien abduction conference. Mac presented his findings, as did Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs, an associate professor of history at Temple University, and he was teaching the nation's only fully accredited college course on UFOs. And, right. And Mac demanded, if what these abductees are saying is happening to them isn't happening, then what is?
Yeah, that's really the question that we were left with most urgently, that nobody has had a good handle on this to the point of explaining what it is, you know, that these people have encountered. And we don't know. I mean, there just is no explanation. Mac really grappled with all the possibilities that these were beings that were trying to guide us away from environmental disaster, an advanced civilization that was alarmed about the fate of the Earth and was sending us messages, or that was looking for a new planet to colonize. I mean, there are all these theories that, of course, lack any smidgen of scientific proof. I think what we're left with is that there's some phenomenon that we can't explain that appears again and again to people all over the world. And it's been going on a long time, although it seems to have stepped up, and at least the reports of it seem to have stepped up in recent years in phases. It's you know, it remains a colossal mystery, and I think just to admit that would be progress.
The beings didn't have to come from outer space, Mac theorized, maybe just a parallel universe. But by the time he wrote Abduction, he said his cases had amply corroborated the work of Hopkins and Jacobs, quoting here, namely that the abduction phenomenon is in some central way involved in a breeding program that results in the creation of alien-human hybrid offspring. And he concluded, furthermore, that the aliens were carrying warnings about dangers to the planet. Almost all of his abductees emerged with a commitment to changing their relationship to the Earth. It's almost like, let's talk about TV again, almost like Knowing, that little picture with Nicolas Cage in it.
Right.
Where the little extra ETs show up, you know, and rescue the children.
Right. No, it was Mac became, you know, at various points, he got carried away with what he'd been hearing. And as I said before, he became a kind of an advocate for things that perhaps he should have made clear were not things he himself could testify to, only heard from other people. But it is amazing, though, how many people have had these encounters and discussed them with their psychiatrists or discuss them seriously, come down to the question of some kind of a sexual encounter, and they are shown, you know, creatures that they say are their children, that they've had these children. So it's not something Mac made up. A lot of the experiences deal with these memories, if you agree that these people are actually remembering something, where they've had sexual encounters with these beings. But I want to go back to what you said about the conference at MIT. This is really extraordinary that in 1992 there was actually a high-level abduction conference with scientists, physicists, Bud Hopkins, John Mack, at MIT. MIT wasn't particularly happy about opening its doors to this, but they had agreed. And there was a whole book written about it by C.D.B. Bryan, who wrote Friendly Fire about the Vietnam War. A very acclaimed and credible journalist covered this conference. The book is out there called Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind. And it treats this subject with great seriousness. And everybody there, the scientists, were scratching their heads and trying to explain what it was that these people had encountered. And I think we have to get back to that. There are some scientists who are not afraid to say that they are struck by the mystery. Rudy Schild at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics at Harvard is one of those, brave scientists who's not afraid to say that he is astonished by some of the accounts that seem to have some credibility in terms of people talking about, voyaging through the universe, through the cosmos, and seeing things that he said only a scientist could understand as true. The people would have to do a lot of research, ordinary people, to be able to describe these astrological astronomical descriptions, these experiences they've had, in a way that would satisfy a scientist. He doesn't understand how they can, cite these facts without being experts themselves.
Right.
So there are some credible scientists who are fascinated by this mystery, but we have to always remember that to keep asking the questions and not pop out with answers.
I guess it's from time immemorial, people have been concerned about the end of the world, but BBC journalist Tim Leach in Zimbabwe called Mack's office about a flurry of UFO sightings. And so Mack and his research partner Kalimanopoulos flew off to investigate a report that on September 14, 1994, a large saucer-shaped spacecraft and several smaller craft had landed or hovered near a schoolyard in Ruwa, 40 miles northeast of Harare. And the children told Mack and Kalimanopoulos on tape that the beings had large heads, two holes for nostrils, a slit for a mouth or no mouth at all, and long black hair, and were dressed in dark single-piece suits. And one little girl said, "I think it's about something that's going to happen. What I thought was maybe the world's going to end. They were telling us the world's going to end." I want to get your, gosh, this has been an awfully fast hour and a half, but I want to get your thoughts on that and just that and a couple of other things, just your take on if maybe that's what this is all about. We're being warned that something is coming to a close, namely us. This is Coast to Coast AM. So shortly after 11 p.m. in the North London suburb of Barnet, John Mack climbed wearily out of the underground station at Totteridge and Whetstone. His lecture about T.E. Lawrence had gone well. Many in the audience had bought copies of his Lawrence biography, which they asked him to sign. He's also spoken about the death of his father, Edward Mack, who 31 years before, almost to the day, had been driving home with the groceries to their summer home in Thetford, Vermont, when his car collided with a truck. In London, Mack was staying with a family friend, Veronica Keane, a widow who had told him she'd been receiving messages from her deceased husband. More evidence, Mack thought, of survival of consciousness. She had said to call her from the station and she would pick him up, but Mack decided to walk. He crossed a divider and stepped into the busy street. His American instinct was to look to the left. Tchaikovsky hit the brakes, but too late. Mack's body flew into the air, shattering the Peugeot's windshield before traveling over the roof and landing heavily on the ground. "He just stepped there, bang," Tchaikovsky told the police, who registered his alcohol level at well over the limit. Mack never regained consciousness. From a crumpled paper with an address on it found in his pocket, the police learned his destination and his identity. His friend, Victoria Keane, who sat with Mac's body at the morgue, said he materialized and told her, "It was as if I was touched with a feather. I didn't feel a thing. I was given a choice. Should I go or should I stay? I looked down at my broken body and decided to go." Wow. Unbelievable. Barbara Lamb and other friends also reported visitations. John Edward Mack, extraordinary. We'll be right back with our final segment for tonight's program. Our first-time guest, Ralph Blumenthal. Quite a writer, quite a researcher, and just quite a guest on Coast to Coast AM. Stand by. We'll be right back. Ralph Blumenthal, I said Victoria, accident. Veronica Keene, the widow who told John Mack she'd been receiving messages from her deceased husband. More evidence, Mack thought, of survival of consciousness. What do you make of all that, him materializing while she sat with him?
Well, you know, the more I look into this, John, the more I realize it's not just, you know, UFOs and alien abduction. There's a whole, and this is what Mac was onto, there's a whole other dimension of spiritual richness, whatever, out there. That I would say is part of the same phenomenon or related phenomena, things that we don't understand. But I mean, the whole issue of mediums contacting the deceased, psychic phenomena, remote viewing, the ability to see things thousands of miles away. There are senses that. That the body has, that scientists are finding out, that are not explainable by ordinary,
science.
Well, the things that we know now, but in the future someday we may know more about. There are other abilities, instincts that people have. So it's really part of a related universe, if you will, of abilities that we have, or experiences that people have had over the years. If you look into the literature of strange things, Jacques Vallée and NASA, a scientist for the French equivalent of NASA in France, has written a whole book on weird, unexplained phenomena going back hundreds and thousands of years in early literature, strange appearances, everything from creatures to spirits. So there are a lot of things. It's not just one thing that we don't understand. There's lots of things that manifest that we don't understand, that may be related through other dimensions or so. Remember that when the first meteors struck the Earth, people were dumbfounded. They thought it was crazy idea, rocks falling from the sky, and they had to be brought to the understanding that yes, there are objects that fall down, and it's scientifically provable, meteors. You asked earlier about the fact that some of these alien encounters seem to involve warnings about the future of the planet. A lot of Mac's subjects and patients said that after they had their abduction experiences, they became more sensitive to the dangers facing the planet, that they were given some kind of message about the way we were befouling the Earth. That is a common theme. I don't know what it means, but a lot of people have reported that. Mac thought it was related in some way to the warnings to protect the planet and to steer away from this ruinous path we're on with global warming and pollution.
Yeah. Now, John Mack's only been gone since 2004.
Yes. So. 2000. 4 or 7, I forgot when he died. There's a movie being made about him. People are waking up, I think, to his good work. Bud Hopkins, who only died about a year and a half ago, spent a lot of time talking about Mac and his great contributions. You mentioned that incident in Zimbabwe, which is really one of the most powerful mysteries, UFO sightings, a whole bunch of school kids, dozens of school kids, 60, 70 more, saw this strange object land or hover at a schoolyard in Zimbabwe. And they had contact with these beings that they saw. They said they saw there, and Mac rushed there to interview these kids because kids make good witnesses. They're not these kids haven't watched, you know, Star Trek. They haven't been polluted by all the cultural references to UFOs, and they were just telling in their simple, childish way what they had seen and encountered, and these beings had given them telepathic messages. People ask, well, how come the beings speak English? Well, they just seem, everyone who says they've encountered them says they have a way of telepathically communicating a message right into the mind of the experiencer. So these kids got these messages and told Mac, and Mac conducted dozens of taped interviews with these kids, and they all told the same story about seeing these beings there. Well, that became a very powerful episode, and it's being explored further by a film documentarian and other articles. So we can't close our eyes to these really fascinating witness accounts, which is really all Mac was saying, you know, in the end.
So much for that that little game that you play around the campfire where you whisper into your neighbor's ear, and then by the time it makes it around the circle, the story's totally changed. The stories with these children was consistent.
It was consistent, and Mac interviewed them separately. He didn't bring them all into a room where they would, you know, influence each other. He interviewed them one at a time. It's all on tape. I've read some of the transcripts. They're absolutely fascinating. And again, these kids, you know, what's interesting in these experiencer accounts is sometimes kids and parents will have the corroborating accounts. A kid will go in, look, the mother will say, will remember that she had some kind of an abduction experience, and the kid will say, I went into her, I tried to find my mom, she wasn't there. And that raises the whole question of whether you're physically abducted or is it some mental process. In some cases, people are seen as physically absent. You know, we also haven't really discussed this, but a lot of the abduction stories run in families, generations. And if you haven't had an abduction experience by the time you're 50 or 60 years old, you probably won't. That's just one of the patterns that comes up. Children have them, the parents have had them, and sometimes the grandparents have had them. And often the parents don't talk about it because they're so troubled by it. But when you delve into the family histories, you see it runs in families. So there's really some fascinating threads through this. Again, we don't understand why. There's no explanation for it. It's not scientifically duplicatable. But as Mac kept saying, there is a science of human experience here that has to be explored. Why all these people over the years are telling such consistent stories, and it's not all because of cultural influence.
You know what, something that continues to get my attention, and there seems to be a decided consistency to it, and that is, in the end, the L word always enters into the conversation, and that would be love. You've written that with the new millennium, Mac's interest had shifted to a new mystery, the survival of consciousness, and then you go on to say that Elizabeth and Mark, before and after death, the power of a field of love from someone who had passed away, and the man continued to receive, you know, love thoughts and love vibes, if you will, from his wife who had departed this reality.
Yeah, it's true that Mac found, you know, along with the terror that many experiencers have experienced, because these encounters are really very frightening on many levels, they are also very often accompanied by tremendous feelings of love and identification with these beings, whatever they are. So people who've had these encounters say they have had, in some cases, a physical connection, But in many cases, a tremendous feeling of love and attraction, as if they were being, you know, sped into this world of light and love. And it's a connection that they report afterwards that they say is like nothing on earth. And now, you know, we have the book by Eben Alexander, the neurosurgeon, who talks about his trip to heaven. And it's extraordinary. He's a scientist who's reporting these experiences. And again, a lot to do with love. He connects with a long-dead sister he never knew he had. Again, is it literal? Do I really believe it? I don't know. It's somebody's account who's credible. This guy is a neurosurgeon, and he writes about his encounters, experiences with great scientific knowledge. So they can't all be dismissed as aberrations, as they're crazy, they're publicity seekers. It comes out in so many different ways, and Mac was exploring the survival of consciousness when he died, and he did appear to come back. Certain people, let's say, have reported visitations by him, and the most fascinating one of all is a colleague said she got a message from Mac after he had died, and he said to her, or communicated to her, he now knew the answer to the abduction mystery, and she waited breathlessly for that answer, and he said, "It's not what we thought."
Wow.
And she was wondering, well, what was it? He said, I'll be back to tell you more, in effect, and he has not yet materialized again. So she's left with this tantalizing mystery, "It's not what we thought," which to me is really one of the most haunting parts of the whole Mac story.
I'll tell you, I have to go back to this, because this article is so in depth, it's so excellent. His friends, Elizabeth Targ, a psychiatrist with an interest in the paranormal, and her husband, Mark Cummings, a theoretical physicist specializing in alternative energy. Targ's grandfather, William, as editor-in-chief of G.P. Putnam's, had published The Godfather, and her father, Russell, an inventor of the laser, conducted top-secret extrasensory experiments for the CIA and remote viewing. And Elizabeth's mother, Joan, was the sister of chess grandmaster Bobby Fischer, taught her little brother the game of chess. And she was, Elizabeth was also a prodigy with unusual mental powers. And then her husband is saying that she's sending messages of love from beyond the grave. And Mac was writing this book about Elizabeth and Mark before and after death, The Power of a Field of Love. This is just extraordinary. It really is. It's beginning to look like the old good and evil, and love conquers all, and consciousness survives, and all of that. And it's wonderful in a way.
There's a love part of this, and then there's something very frightening, and we can't sugarcoat this thing, because a lot of people who've had these experiences have been terrified by the encounters, and have been as many who've felt this great outpouring of love. Many others have also found great horror in the experience, and an overwhelming, overpowering, disturbing effect. And that's why so few people have come forward to tell these stories. And they come out through hypnosis and, you know, the deep interviews, et cetera, because they are so upsetting. And so it's, you know, we can't just think of these things as, it's connecting to the beauty of the universe and love. Yes, Mac,
right.
Research some of these, the power of love and survival. But there's a flip side to this that is very, very disturbing and frightening. And you read Whitley Strieber's book. I think he's really one of the most credible people here, because he, if you read the book, he comes to it with questions, not answers. He said, this and this and this happened to me. I don't understand why and how. And he keeps denying that they even happened. So it's not as if he's promoting these experiences, although he did get a best-selling book out of it. But he's puzzled. But some of the experiences are horrifying. And that's what makes him, what makes the whole feel so intriguing and scary.
You know, I was privileged to have an interview with Whitley Strieber on this program recently, and he seems like a very steady guy. I'm wondering if whether you have a good experience or a bad experience during an abduction goes to the character of the person in any way. You know what I mean?
I don't know. That would be an interesting study, and I'm not sure Mac ever related it to that. You know, you did ask briefly before about how Mac was taken in by this woman, one of his experiencers, abductees, who told a story that was so strange, and Mac kind of went for it, and later she said, oh, it was a hoax. She claimed she'd been taken up into a flying saucer with Nikita Khrushchev and John F. Kennedy during the missile crisis, Cuban Missile Crisis. And Mac was so taken by the story that he was dying to hear more. And then she sort of pulled a sting on him and went public to Time Magazine. And Time Magazine made a lot of fun of Mac for buying the story. So, you know, Mac was taken in, victimized by this, but it showed that he, one of his weaknesses, that he was less than detached at a number of important points. But it was a really nasty thing to do.
Well, anybody can walk into a buzzsaw, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And but he was a very courageous person. He put his whole career on the line. He jeopardized his scientific standing with Harvard. He wasn't afraid to go public with that and to admit, which is the basis of all science, that I've encountered something that is contrary to the prevailing view. Copernicus said that. Darwin said that. Newton said that. All the great scientists of our time have come across another reality, and that has led to a great leap.
We have to go, Ralph. I hate to do it, but would you please come back in the near future and let's discuss this some more, because it's extraordinary. Thank you very much for being with us tonight. All right, excellent. Well, we got 30 seconds, so let's just say this. That is, at the bottom, the only courage that is demanded of us, to have the courage for the most strange, the most singular, and the most inexplicable that we may encounter. The whole so-called spirit world, death, all those things that are so closely akin to us, have by daily parrying been so crowded out of life that the senses with which we could have grasped them are atrophied, to say nothing of God. Thanks for being with us tonight. Apologies to those we missed on the calls. Talk to you next Saturday. Good night.